Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No! It's the Flight Free Podcast. One presenter. One special guest. One mission to save planet Earth. Will they succeed? Find out in this thrilling episode of the Flight Free Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Flight Free Podcast. We're going down the spiritual route today and speaking to Shaman Evangeline about how slow travel helps us connect with the land and why it's important to be more aware of nature as we make our choices about where we travel, and also a bit about why UK travel is so wonderful. So thank you for joining us, Evangeline. It's great to have you. Could you just introduce yourself, please?
So I'm a musician, I'm a writer, and I'm a shaman. So basically I spend a lot of time connecting to the land, to the spirits of the land, to people's ancestors. I do a lot of dream work, and I write a lot about decolonizing and getting back into nature. And then so a lot of that for me means going on my own journey with connecting to the land, connecting to the UK, and not harming the land. Basically, like, what steps can I take to make sure I'm not further harming the land, and how that's gonna impact my life?
Yeah, I really want to talk a lot about the shamanism and how that feeds into our mentality, and how that can perhaps inform our attitude towards where we live and travel. But yeah, just to kind of give a little bit of context, so I had seen a post of yours on Instagram that I found really inspiring, which was talking about UK travel and asking the questions that we try and ask a lot here at Flight Free UK, which is, why is the default for us to think that travel only counts if it's far away or if it's this kind of exotic location? And of course, that typically involves a flight. So if we can try to reset the way people are seeing things, and I mean, we promote the UK as a travel destination a lot, as much as we can. But I thought the things that you said on that post were really relevant and very powerful. And then, so it would be great to explore some of those ideas as well.
Yeah, I guess so. When I was a child, we traveled a lot, very, very frequently, a lot of flying. And as I was kind of trying to just deepen my relationship to the land and also eat more seasonally, and just have a deeper connection to the world around me, but the place around me, I was thinking a lot about, you know, my experiences of travel as a child. And I kind of realized that I really didn't enjoy them very much, especially when it was overseas and we had to fly. And I think a lot of people kind of see travel as a privilege, which it is, I mean, in many ways. But when I really thought about it, I enjoyed the travel that I did here in the UK, but also travel that I did kind of via train and just in Europe. Those were definitely my favorite journeys. And I was also kind of thinking about the fact that I just always wanted to be at home. So I grew up in London, but it was kind of the outskirts of London, and it was a very green area, and I lived next to like an old forest, and I really just always wanted to be at home. I wanted to be on the land. I had such a deep relationship with the land, and I just didn't see the appeal in leaving it and flying. And I think this is really the mentality that I'm trying to unravel in myself and kind of teach other people about, which is seeing the land as an actual being, a spirit, not just like a resource or just somewhere that I live. And to actually stay here and kind of get to know the place, it's like getting to know a person. You're getting to know this being, and how deep that relationship can go. I mean, in a lot of indigenous cultures, to be taken off the land, it's so painful. It's like a loss of your soul because you're so connected to it. And that's really the kind of relationship that I had with the land that I grew up on. And so even to be away from it for like a week or two was really painful to me. And I think I kind of lost that as I got older.
Do you think that was specifically related to the act of flying then, because you are just forced into the air? So so is it that kind of physical removal from the earth that flying does? Is that what's so sort of disturbing?
I think, yeah, I do. I mean, the physical effects of flying, I would always hate as well. Just, I would get this horrible like ringing in my ears and pain. And obviously you get jet lag and you're being exposed to radiation. And it's just a very unnatural kind of way to get somewhere. And you're suddenly in this new time zone, which I always found really jarring. So yeah, I do think it's a very strange way to travel. It's kind of disorienting. It doesn't really feel like a journey. And I think for me, it's about the journey. If I want to go somewhere, I want to really go there. I want to be really immersed in this journey, and I want it to take as long as it, you know, would naturally take, rather than trying to get there so quickly and so fast. Because I was thinking a lot about pilgrimages recently and how travel kind of transformed from pilgrimages to holidays. And for pilgrimages, it would obviously be a very long journey, usually on foot or on a horse, and it was all about the time that it took to get there. And reading accounts of people's pilgrimages from the past, of seeing the landscape change as you're walking and really getting to know the land, and then kind of weeping as you arrive at your destination because it's just so epic. Yeah, so I think that's it's a much better way to kind of experience the world.
Yeah, definitely. Even if we don't do those actual pilgrimages, it's taking the elements of it and the gratitude for where you are and just the slowness and the mindset. Yeah, I think we'd do quite well actually to take those elements and put them in our current travel, wouldn't we? So when did you decide that you weren't going to fly anymore?
It kind of happened accidentally. I just didn't really go anywhere. I mean, the last time I flew, I was 16, so that was 11 years ago. And yeah, it was sort of just like nobody else had kind of booked any other holidays or flights, and I kind of naturally didn't want to book anything, had no desire to go outside of the country really, and definitely not via plane. So it kind of was an accident, but then it became an intentional choice probably 2 years ago or so, when I was really looking into the harms of flying, and specifically the harms in terms of noise pollution from airports and the way that it would disrupt birds' communication and their songs and even their flight patterns and things like that. So it became an intentional choice to kind of really commit to, if I wanted to go somewhere, I wanted to get away, then I would just stay in the UK, or at least I would take a train and go somewhere in Europe, which it can definitely be challenging, I think, especially when it's cold and you just think, oh, it's raining and it's so dark and I just want to be in the sun. But it feels more rewarding, I think, when you make that commitment and then, you know, I'm going to see this through. I'm really going to build this relationship and commit to this land, even if it's not always amazing and sunny and luxurious.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point to explore, actually, because we, as humans, we respond to nature and we need the sun. And, you know, we love the sun. And it can get really hard in the winter when the days are short. And, you know, that's why there's seasonal depression, and that's why animals hibernate. But we just don't, because our society perhaps pushes us away from, I don't know if in previous times, human activity would probably go down quite a lot in the winter just because there's so few hours of daylight. But do you think that's part of it as well, like to just resist that urge to go and lie on a beach in the sun in the winter and actually be like, no, I'm going to try to get to grips with the nature that I'm currently surrounded with and, you know, really feel the seasons and be in tune with the seasons? Is that something that resonates with you?
Yeah, so I feel like to live seasonally is really important. And obviously, there's a lot of lessons we can learn from each season, especially winter when everything's kind of dying and it just feels like a very sparse place to be. And I think there is something natural in wanting to kind of go to the sun. But obviously, if we were hunter-gatherers, we would have been like walking that journey to go somewhere a bit sunnier and we still would have experienced some kind of winter, and it wouldn't have been so artificial to just hop on a plane and kind of leave and not have anything to do with the land that you're on. But yeah, no, I think there's a lot of lessons in living seasonally, in celebrating the seasons, in eating seasonally, and kind of getting to know what's actually available to you to eat in that season, and what are the activities that you can do here to kind of make it feel, I mean, I think it's a good season to celebrate, even though it is very cold, but it just, I think it's also this idea of what is luxury and what is resting. And I think we associate luxury with the sun and with being somewhere else. For some reason, the UK is just not associated with luxury.
But there's so much beauty here, you know. I mean, even today, it's really sunny today, and yes, it's cold, and yes, there have been storms, and it rained all day yesterday, but actually the season's changing and the leaves changing colour, and going for a walk in winter is actually a really wonderful thing to do. And so I think if we remove that kind of artificial, I want to be somewhere else, then, and appreciate where we are, it actually is really good for us spiritually, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that really comes from not having a relationship with the land. I think if you just don't have that relationship, you have no kind of reason to be there, or you feel that you have no reason to be there. And it is really hard. It can be really hard to develop that relationship, especially if you live in a city and you don't have much access to nature, or you don't even have a garden. You know, you're kind of blocked from deepening that relationship, which is really, really difficult. And even in the countryside, there's a lot of land access issues, and it's hard to kind of feel completely wild and free because it's mainly farmland. But for me, growing up kind of outside, a little bit outside of London, it was much easier to have more of a visceral relationship with the land because I was physically able to be on it so much.
Yeah, so you mentioned one of your motivations is not harming the land. Is that tied into shamanism then? Do you want to talk a little bit about your life as a shaman?
Yeah, it's so hard for me to describe because I'm always like, oh, I don't know if people understand what I'm saying, but I'll try. So for me, it's the land is the being that facilitates the relationship with all other beings, and it holds the web of life. So it holds every other ecosystem. It holds every other spirit. So it's the most important kind of foundation of everything that I work with and that I do. And it really, you know, it just facilitates us to be alive. It really holds us. And it's kind of this constant witness. It's witnessing us, you know, because our society can feel so lonely and isolated. But wherever we are, like, we're on land, and the land is there, and the land is witnessing us and going through the same things that we're going through. And so all of us have a relationship with the land, especially if we've lived in the same place for a long time, but we maybe just don't think about it, or it might take getting off that land to really reflect on how we connected to it and how we did always have a relationship with it all along. And so in my work, I mean, I communicate with a lot of people's ancestors, but there's kind of a misconception that ancestors are only human, when actually ancestors are also the land and the trees and the animals of, you know, where you're living, but also where your ancestors historically lived. So then that means communing and communicating with the land. And I'm mixed race, and I have many different lineages. So I have a relationship with a lot of different lands. But really, what was, when I started to kind of deepen these relationships, what was so kind of evident was the pain of the land and the kind of the trauma of the land that has been imposed upon it by civilization, really. You know, building roads and houses even, or at least the way that we build houses in our culture.
And the way we farm as well, like with monocrops and not allowing wild areas to thrive.
Yeah, exactly. The way we eat, yeah, the way we farm, the way we travel.
Yeah, I find that quite odd because we look at farmland and we think that's all green and pleasant and countryside and that's lovely because there's plants growing, but you're like, no, this is actually really degrading for the land.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's just so much that's harming the land, and the land is in a lot of pain and feels a lot of anger. And then I really had to look at myself and think, how can I stop harming the land, you know, specifically in my own area, but also just the entirety of the planet, which is, yeah, really what inspired me. Because as I said, like, it is a relationship, so it's almost like I'd be hurting my friend, and I obviously don't want to do that. I'd be harming my ancestor. So yeah, and part of shamanism is definitely to be a steward of the planet, and to, you know, you have a responsibility to care for it and to kind of keep it in good condition. I mean, every, you know, all humans really, but I think it just becomes, it feels more urgent when you're really communicating with these beings and really seeing the harm that's been done.
So I know shamanism is quite a niche thing. What elements of it can be mainstream? That might sound like a silly question, but I think a lot of people would be like, oh, well, no, I don't understand that. Like, that's not for me, you know. Shamanism just sounds too ritualistic or whatever. But obviously this does affect our daily life. So are there like little bits that could be seen as mainstream, if you see what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Let me think of how to describe it. I think it's true in the sense that even in a tribal community, the shaman would have been seen as a bit mad, as a bit, you know, they're completely in the spirit world. You don't really know what they're saying, but you would still kind of respect that they understand this spirit world and you go to them for kind of advice or for healing. But even so, the rest of the tribe would participate in rituals and would still kind of have that deep connection with nature. And shamanism is the oldest religion. I mean, I don't like to call it a religion, but it's the oldest form of spirituality that can be found absolutely everywhere, because it's basically just connection with nature and being in relationship with nature and the land. And the actual shaman is just in the deepest relationship out of everyone in the group. So I think, yeah, I think maybe the word shamanism is a bit kind of scares people maybe, but I also like to use the word rewilding, which to me is just getting back to our natural state. And I think it's easier to kind of conceptualize that when we really look at how artificial the world is that we live in now. So I think that's part of the problem, because people just think this is normal and this is what life is and this is all natural, that it can kind of seem really scary.
Yeah, and rewilding is probably a good word, given that it's come into the public conscious a little bit. You know, people are quite aware of what rewilding is if we're talking specifically about nature, but then we can also rewild ourselves.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think it's such a different way of being, and it's a completely different mindset, because you really have to shift from seeing land, nature, food, animals as resources, but also as separate to you. And it's very hard, like, if you're living completely in the human world and you don't really interact with nature at all, then I think, yeah, it doesn't really make sense to kind of incorporate these things into your life or to try and rewild. But for me, you know, I think also it's just kind of a attitude that, like, anything indigenous or anything that a hunter-gatherer would have done from the past is somehow kind of regressing as a species, and that we've made so much progress supposedly and we should be going forward, which again is like, shamanism is a very circular kind of belief system, that there is no forward or backwards, you know, it's all a circle, it's all kind of feeding into each other. And in this case, what we perceive as going backwards would actually be going forwards and would be a positive thing.
Definitely. I think that's important to remember, isn't it? Because, I mean, everything goes in cycles anyway, but a lot of the answers to our current challenges are often going back to basics and keeping things simple and remembering how we did things before fossil fuels took over and everything else. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's just a much deeper kind of experience. There's something that lives in those slower experiences that you just can't find in a really fast-paced kind of human-made artificial life or world. You know, when I contrast my experience of being on a plane and going somewhere that I have no connection to, and I'm there kind of in an instant, and I there was just no connection. There wasn't anything, you know, it wasn't a life-changing experience. It was kind of a consumerist experience, almost like, you know, everything's so fast-paced and, oh, I want to go here and I want to go there. And then I think of, you know, when I've been somewhere and I've really made an intention to get there in a way that won't harm the land and in a way that is slow and at a natural pace and to really connect to it, it's a completely different experience.
So should we delve into that a little bit more? Because one of the things that you put on your Instagram, it says, I am determined to make UK travel the go-to. The earth will thank us. And you said that every time you post pictures of your travels, it's always in the UK and people are surprised because they're like, oh, wow, that looks so exotic, or, you know, where have you been, sort of thing. So do you want to delve into that a little bit more? So finding the extraordinary right here in the UK and that being enough?
Yeah, so my family is from Lancashire, so a lot of my travels are around Lancashire because you can have the deepest experience wherever your ancestors were. And it's also just a really beautiful area of the UK. But I find that I have the deepest experiences there. And I think the UK is just so London-centric that people really forget that anything else exists outside of it. Especially recently, I was thinking about the kind of decline of seaside towns, that would have been your holiday to just go down to the seaside in the UK. You know, we have beaches, we have sandy beaches as well. And some of the most beautiful beaches I've been to are in the UK. And I think, you know, the land is, it's an amazing country in terms of the nature, the landscape, the kind of different terrains you can go to as well. You can go to the beach, or you can go to the mountains or a lake or a forest. There are so many, there's just so much to explore. And I haven't even, you know, I've only really explored like a very small area of the UK. I've been in certain parts of Kent and Lancashire and Devon a tiny bit. And I still feel like it's going to take me years to really fully get to know this land and fully explore everything that it has to offer.
Yeah, I think that's a really important message and so key to the Flight Free message, which is we have a lifetime of exploration on our doorstep. And yeah, that can involve foreign travel. And of course, sometimes we want that, a bit of a cultural mix or a bit of a different cultural experience. But there are lots of people who never leave the UK and are perfectly satisfied with that. And I think that that doesn't make us small-minded. Actually, I think we can still be broad-minded without really going very far at all. It's more about your mindset, isn't it? Not about where you go. And when people comment, like, where's this picture? And then you tell them it's the UK. Do you think people are surprised?
Definitely. I think, yeah, a lot of my friends will, I mean, they're not surprised now because they know that I never go anywhere else. But in the beginning, they would definitely be like, what, really? Especially if I was posting pictures of the Lake District, because it can really look like Canada or New Zealand or something. And I think people are just shocked when they see it. And I just think there's kind of a negative, or at least I've noticed people here kind of have a very negative view of the country, especially in kind of terms of holidays or traveling. And it's, yeah, I'm not sure what that's about.
Yeah, there is definitely that kind of fundamental, well, if it doesn't involve foreign travel, then it doesn't count as a holiday.
I think foreign travel is kind of seen as, oh, you're so educated and it's very cosmopolitan. And, you know, but I think back to my travels and I really didn't learn much about the local people or the culture. I've learned a lot more from just staying here and reading about it or listening to the voices of those people in a different setting or going to a museum.
Yeah, really good point, actually. There are so many ways we can learn about the world, and many of them don't involve getting on the plane.
Yeah, see, that was another reason for my kind of not wanting to travel, is how travel often, or tourism in general, will often take away resources from local people and can often push local people out of the area and just kind of deplete the natural resources as well.
Yeah, interesting angle, because so many of the arguments are, well, what about tourism? Tourism supports the local economy. But I think it's really important to balance that with what you've just said, which is actually the local people are priced out of that area, and the degradation of the natural area, like certain tourist traps, for example, Machu Picchu. The town Cusco is so overridden with the tourist influx that it's incredibly, the biodiversity is very damaged as a result.
Yeah, and I was reading about how much water is used for tourism, especially in hotels, and that, you know, the peak season of tourism often corresponds with the dry season. So they're kind of using up all the water in wells, and they're kind of diverting this really limited water supply to the tourists who really don't need to be there. And, you know, just so many issues with tourism.
So you mentioned decolonizing the concept of getting back to nature. Is that part of this? So, you know, our colonial mindset is, oh, all these lands are our holiday destination. Well, actually, there's someone's home.
Absolutely. So, again, I think it's part of decolonizing is to have a relationship with that land. And I think, you know, that means taking into account the wants and needs of that place. And, you know, just because I want to go to Spain or I want to go somewhere, it doesn't mean that the land can actually receive me. It might not be able to receive me. It might just not have the resources. Again, it might be a dry season. It won't have enough water for me. I might be eroding the soil by going there. And, you know, there are so many things to kind of think about when it comes to that. And also, I think the issue of consent is an interesting one as well, because whenever I interact with or connect with the land or trees or nature spirits, it's always about, do you want this to happen? You know, you as a spirit, as a separate being, are you okay with this? And they can say no, and they do say no, and they can be quite angry. And so I think about that as well. It's kind of, you're just overriding the will of every other living being, because you feel like your holiday is more important. And it's really difficult. Like, it is hard because we've been taught that, you know, I should just, if I have the money for it, I can do it and that's fine. So I think before, if I ever travel, I mean, I think I'll travel to another country again, I'm sure, maybe not flying, but I know that I'll do a ritual first, connect to the land and really ask it, you know, can I come here? Are you okay with that? Do you want me to be here? And if not, you know, I wouldn't go. Because, you know, people do experience like a call to the land. The land might call them. And, you know, you might start dreaming about the place, or you just might have this really strong feeling that you need to go there. And that might be the land inviting you. And maybe you have an ancestral connection with it or something. And that's, you know, you need to be there. But it has to be a two-way thing. It has to be reciprocal. And we can't just keep overriding nature and the land and just doing whatever we want. I think that's the key, one of the key mindsets to decolonizing anything, but especially travel, because I think the drive to travel is natural. Like, we would have been going to different places as hunter-gatherers, but I think we would have been revisiting the same places a lot as well. And so kind of have a specific route and deepening our relationship with those places, and also caring for the places, you know, not taking the resources. If we see that, oh, there's actually not enough fruit on this tree, let's go to another place, let's not kind of stay here and use up all the resources. But it's difficult when that's all being hidden and it's invisible and you can't really see what you're taking and what is available to you.
Thank you so much, Evangeline. It's been so interesting to hear those insights, because we don't really have this kind of conversation very often. So I hope our listeners are intrigued and inspired, and we'll consider a bit more carefully what travel and our presence on this earth actually means. So thank you for joining us, and thank you for giving us your insights.
Thank you.
And thank you, listener, for joining us for another conversation. We'll be back again next month, so look out for that. And in the meantime, stay safe, stay grounded, and stay spiritual.
This podcast was brought to you by the team at Flight Free UK. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to join the Flight Free Challenge for 2023. All you need to know for your challenge is at flightfree.co.uk. The Flight Free Podcast will return!